Okay, let's get to work. Call the meeting of the Agriculture, Rural Economies, Veterans Affairs, Finance Division to order. Representative Hosh moves the minutes of March 4th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted. Members, couple things. This, hopefully, if we can stick it out and move like we want, will be the last day for Veterans Budget Overview, which means tomorrow agriculture and next week finish up on agriculture as well as AURI, Board of Animal Health, those types of things. We're going to try and get them along. By the way, a preview on AURI, is that the 18th? 18th, next Wednesday. They will have food samples here, and we will be helping them actually on a project so they can demonstrate what they do, but they're actually going to utilize us in a taste test on a new cut of meat or something they're putting in a sandwich or I don't know, out of their meat lab. They're going to have samples, and we're going to do some comparison and some critiquing on it. So you don't want to be late on Wednesday, or you don't get to be part of that. So that'll be interesting. Then, as we move into the next 2 weeks, we'll be hearing bills for those 2 weeks, those 4 days. I think we can get through most of the stuff that's in our division. And then in the meantime, be meeting with everyone individually or as small groups and others. We'll be talking about our budget bill, which again, we'll have staff working on hopefully the last week of March to put language together for us. And again, we want to get that done and introduced on April 7th if we can, mark it up on April 8th and go home for Easter knowing we're done, which I think is good rather than coming back and having to put bills together like the rest of the committees probably will be doing. So we're still shooting for that. Again, we don't know when and if or what our targets are going to look like. Ways and Means and Finance is working on that, and that should be coming, I hope, in the next couple weeks. And once we get that, then, like I say, we have our decisions to make after that. So just a little preview. If you if there's something we're missing or something else you want to accomplish, you know, let me know after our get the bill out of here. We're still allowed by our rules to hear individual finance bills. So if there's any individual bills, there's no deadline for that. And our deadlines are only for the omnibus bill. So we still have opportunities, although if you're not in the omnibus bill, good luck. But we can still hear those bills. And then we'll be filling our meetings the rest of the year with various things, including we will be doing a probably getting reports. We did a bunch of energy projects last year, and they all have all been reporting back, so we can see where that money went and how it was utilized. After May 1st, but before the session adjourns, we'll be taking a look at new bonding bills that have come in here, and we have a bunch of them. So we can maybe get some communication to the bonding committee before they start their summer and fall tours. So we want to prioritize, if we can, those projects. So we have a number of things to do after deadline, but it'll be more sporadic at that point and in scheduling. So just letting you know where we're at. Veterans Affairs is here. Welcome. It's your day to move her through. So, one more thing. Is Christine Keel here, too? Oh, yeah, there she is. I don't know if you want a letter or not, but I'm going to make this request today. And I'm going to make it tomorrow to agriculture, and nothing vindictive, and just in the, and I already knew this was happening, but as I realized as we're trying to expand these budgets, we're still not quite getting drilled down in some areas to where I want to be, and I actually had the governor, Josh Gackle's guy in the office this morning, because he had that nice front page article, as you all know, in the paper yesterday, so he's pretty proud of that. That's hanging in his office, I think, over in the governor's side of things, but I indicated to him, and now I'm going to indicate to you folks that we'd like a list, committee, and again, bipartisanly, I think, we'd like to see a list of all the dollars in your department that are not utilized within the walls of your department. So, examples. FTEs that are going somewhere else to pay for someone else, like in the governor's office or elsewhere. We see members, as you see, are FTEs. But unless we drill down and say, okay, tell me what every one of them does, we don't necessarily know. And so I think for our decision making, we need to see the FTEs, IT contracts, rent payments, things that are going to other agencies that you can't utilize. They're not your dollars, but rather we're paying someone else's budgets. I think it's helpful for us to see that. Outside contracts and others that, again, your folks aren't doing, but that money's going to the U of M or going wherever it's going, I think are helpful. Other offices, I know in the past, and I don't know what the case is today, which is why I'm asking, in the past, some of our divisions have paid for the Washington, D.C. office, which is interesting. And I don't know if that's the case here. I know it has been the case in agriculture in the past. And so anything like that, which I think, again, will enhance how we do our budgeting process, especially when we're trying to preserve jobs and make sure that our departments stay whole in these times. I think it'd be helpful to know where those outside dollars are going and that we can at least take a look at them. So if you don't need a letter, I won't send you a letter. She's got it. All right. In fact, the agriculture didn't want a letter because then they got to write a letter back and we start writing letters. So I make that request to you, and I'll make it tomorrow, members, for agriculture, too, as long as someone reminds me to do that. All right. Very good. Thank you. And introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Page 22, I'm told. Is that where we're at? Of the budget. Well, yeah. Where else would it be? What other page 22 do I have? All right. We're arguing with staff now. Page 22 is where we're starting. Okay.
My name is Ron Quadi, Director of Veterans Programs, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. It is my pleasure to meet with you this morning and share exciting information and results from the St. Paul and Fargo Claims Division, Tribal Veterans Service Officer Division, and Outreach Division. I will review each division's core values, purpose, FTE, budget, operations based on activities and contacts, special projects, results, and return upon investment. The information totals I present are based on calendar year 2008 and are from the Claims Division's previous information management system, Veterans Information Management System, or VIMS, as well as manual tracking of activities by division staff. 2008 brought to the Claims Division growth, change, and new programs. We said goodbye to some long-term coworkers, welcomed aboard new staff in every division, developed new initiatives, and implemented a new information management system to revolutionize the manner in which VA claims are processed in the state of Minnesota, Virtual Veterans. Although these changes were challenging, the staff in all four divisions worked together to triumph during every turn. I attribute some of this to our core values based on services. Service above and beyond. Excellence is our standard. Respect for service past and present. Veterans first in our hearts, minds, and actions. Innovation, nation-leading services. Compassion through advocacy. Ethics is our cornerstone. Stewardship of resources. Meeting the needs of Minnesota veterans is our top priority, and we pride ourselves on customer service, both directly to veterans and also to the county veteran service officers with whom we work. The ability to identify needs in the veteran community and dispatch individuals to provide personal service is attributed to the outreach and PVSO division's funding and geographical locations. Outreach and PVSO personnel concentrate on assisting the homeless, minorities, women veterans, Native American veterans, as well as other underserved veterans in the state. They have a strong presence in the community, host town hall meetings, and attend veteran-specific events in an effort to educate veterans on the help and resources available to them. Our St. Paul and Fargo Claims Division do an excellent job of representing disabled veterans during the claims process, including professional representation during local hearings and with decision review officers, and also Board of Veterans Appeals hearings with VA judges from Washington, D.C. Training and education is an important and ongoing function of the Claims Division. All divisions currently have basic training, on-the-job training, and apprenticeship and mentorship programs. Additionally, senior claims representative's position descriptions specifically note the responsibility to create topic folders based on claims work or issues and train office staff in areas of advanced claims work on a monthly basis. Total hours of staff training in 2008 equals 2,759. The claims and outreach supervisors have formed a training committee. They are developing a program of continual education and plan to present it to me in the coming months. Claims division staff will continue mentoring between junior and senior claims representatives and take advantage of regional office federal VA rater board training and monthly VA training based on claims issues and updates. In addition, the American Legion provides two representatives biannual three-day training in Indianapolis and Washington, D.C., in where the American Legion legal team, NVLSP, or National Veterans Legal Services Program, briefs on veterans' laws, rules, and regulations, hot topics, and updates. In 2008, the Claims Division was granted a three-month work study where a claims representative worked in Washington, D.C. with the NVLSP legal team in preparation of BVA appeals. Claims and Outreach Divisions manage CDSO basic and advanced basic training. Currently, we have six people involved in the three stages of basic training. Basic includes 2 full days in a new CDSO's office. Stage 2 is a full day at the regional office training with OAS staff, the outreach supervisor, claims supervisor, and senior representatives. And stage 3 is a follow-up day in the CDSO office to offer any additional needs and provide claim-specific assistance. Advanced basic training is a 3-day classroom training including introductions to department leadership, VA Medical Center and VA Regional Office staff, specific pension center training, specific compensation center training, as well as advocacy training by division supervisors and senior claims representatives. The department claims divisions are responsible to coordinate and execute CDSO spring training. Spring training is a 2-day event focusing on departmental, VA Medical Center, and VA Regional Office updating and training specific to claims work and development. This training also includes cooperation with VA employees as well as advocacy advice from senior claims representatives and divisional supervisors. In cases a CDSO office is temporarily vacated, we are called on to assist counties by staffing the county office while efforts to replace the CDSO continue.
Excuse me a minute, Mr. Clowney. I just want to introduce that just walked in our room. These are the 9th and 10th graders, right, from Edison High School. Is that correct? Edison's in Minneapolis, right? 10th graders. Okay, 10th graders. And they're participating in the Minnesota Historical Society Capital Historic Sites Voice of the People, Your Role in Government. And they're here today on a tour and education program. This is the Agriculture and Veterans Affairs Finance Committee. And so what we're doing and what we've been doing the last few months, we oversee about $400 million worth of state government dollars for veterans and agriculture. And we're trying to decide how to best spend that money to serve our veterans population, which is what today is. That's why you see some folks with hats on over here. They're veterans. And tomorrow we'll be talking to our agriculture people about some of their projects. And right now we have a gentleman who's from, these people are from the department, from the governor's department. And they're explaining some of the things they do. CVSOs that he's talking about are county veteran service officers. Every county, in your case Hennepin County, has county veteran service officers where veterans, people that are coming back now from the Iraq War or someone who served in Vietnam, your grandpas or your dads, they can go there if they need assistance or they need benefits or they want to know how you get education money for veterans that they get or any of that. So he's talking about what they do to train those people right now. So it's not real exciting necessarily, but it's something that we have to do. Nothing against you, Mr. Quaddy, but I know you're not a song and dance guy. So but we welcome you here. The Capitol is a really cool place to be. And we're glad you're here for a few minutes to sit into an official committee hearing. And we hope you have a nice day and come back soon. All right, very good. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
In as exciting way as you can.
In 2008, the department staffed 2 county offices, and we are currently assisting 1. Moving into activities and results, I will start with our mobile division outreach. The outreach office seeks to identify and serve veterans of all social and economic backgrounds and their dependents. Outreach representatives advocate for veterans by providing personal case development and tracking of state and federal claims. The outreach office has 5 full-time employees, including Women's Veterans Coordinator. And the outreach budget for fiscal year 08 was $200,057.
And that Women's Coordinator, is that up in Moorhead, or where is that person located?
Mr. Chair, the Women's Veterans Coordinator is located in the Outreach Division at the regional office in St. Paul.
St. Paul, okay. And where's that office?
At Fort Snelling, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Activities included in the Outreach Division were 2,820 phone calls, 480 walk-ins, 354 veterans appointments in the office, and 588 community contacts, resulting in 882 claims actions taken on behalf of veterans and 156 SSAP or state benefits applications taken. On slide 6, we outline Veterans Women's Coordinator efforts. Women's Veterans Coordinator position was started officially 7-1-08, and since, we have 294 women's veterans contacts, 175 actions taken for women veterans, 35 women veteran clients, and 125 number of service providers in the network.
Now, does that position, when if they have a day that aren't full of women veteran coordination activities, do they cross over then and do general activities with your other staff?
Mr. Chair, yes. The Women's Veteran Coordinator, when not tasked specifically with women veteran issues, then functions as outreach staff member.
Okay.
Ongoing Women Veterans projects and upcoming events include Women Veterans Group to identify the needs of Minnesota women veterans, initiation of new outreach to women veterans called Coffee Talk, MCF or Minnesota Correctional Facility Shakopee Transition Fair, Boot Camp to Veteran event, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Women's Veterans Conference scheduled for October 2009. The Tribal Veteran Service Officer Division, providing community outreach to Native American veterans and their dependents to secure state and federal veteran benefits by assisting in tracking veterans' claims directly due to cultural differences and geographical distances. Currently, 9 full-time employees in the Tribal Veteran Service Officer Division and functioning in fiscal year 08 with a budget of
$750,000. Okay. And just out of interest, you can confirm this or not, but I think it's interesting for the 10th graders in the audience too. The reason we have a tribal veterans outreach person is, if I remember right, we find that Native Americans serve at about twice the rate of the rest of the population. They volunteer to serve in the Army about twice as often, or twice as many people as we see in the rest of the population. Isn't that correct? And that's why we're focusing on that group specifically?
Mr. Chair, it's interesting, though, and by chance today, we have the Tribal Veteran Service Officer Division Supervisor, Jim Miller, here with us today.
Where's Jim?
Mr. Miller is right behind me. And Mr. Miller, if he would have some interesting facts surrounding what
Why
you
give us
mentioned.
A quick hit on that right now. I think it's something new that we started a couple of years ago, and I think it's worth mentioning. Just introduce yourself.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jim Miller. I'm the TVSO supervisor for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Traditionally, Native Americans serve at about a 25-50%, depending on the time period, rate. Now, the general population serves at a 2% rate. In correlation, Native American veterans seek benefits about 50% as much as the general population, so it's a very underserved population traditionally.
So where do you go to outreach for these folks, and how do you get the message to them that they may have benefits they can access?
We have PVSOs on 6 of the 11 reservations right now. officer, and we generally get involved with community events and earning the trust back of those veterans that might not have been treated as well coming out of Vietnam, coming out of Korea, and coming in the Desert Storm.
And how about the Twin Cities? Where do you focus your efforts down here?
There's the Native American Community Center. We have a big presence there. A lot of diabetes breakfast, a lot of walks, the Wolves Den. There's many places that we can go to make contact with Native American veterans. And again, start building their trust and get them to come in.
Very good. All right, thank you. I just want a quick hit on that because it's something we started, and I suspect it's working fairly well right now. And we appreciate your efforts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Activities included: 384 federal claims filed, 35 federal appeals pending, and 73 state claims filed, resulting in $38,716 monthly in federal compensation, with an annual amount of $464,952. In addition to that, in retroactive payments or federal one-time payments, the TDSO division has logged $75,800 in retroactive payments. And in state compensation, $51,836.84. In local assistance, local government assistance and discharge upgrades, there have been 77 assistances. The Fargo Claims Division represents veterans and their dependents who seek benefits from the United States Department of Veterans Affairs with regards to compensation, non-service-connected pension, vocational rehabilitation, or educational benefits. The division has an established relationship with 13 Northwest Minnesota County Veteran Service Officers and the USVDA to ensure veterans are appropriately served. The Fargo functions with 3 full-time employees and with a fiscal year 08 budget of, and this is combined with St. Paul, I might add, of $971,000. Activities included were 12,972 phone calls and walk-ins. 12,972 phone calls in and out of the office. 1,656 walk-ins. 3,336 processed pieces of mail or evidence. 1,308 training hours, and 19 and a half days with CDSO training or CDSO office visits.
Results follow-up has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this office combined with the North Dakota Veterans Office or something along that line? I'm just concerned as to why it's in Fargo instead of Moorhead. So if it's part of another facility that's there, that makes sense. Otherwise, I guess so if you could tell me why it's in Fargo.
Is it Quatty or Quaid?
Mr. Chair, Quatty.
Quatty, all right. That's what it was where I grew up, down in Wells, Minnesota. We had Quatty down in Fairwell County.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, we have a claims office in Fargo. The 13 counties that I mentioned, there are separate sections of the state that the claims work that is not routed to the St. Paul regional office is routed to the Fargo office. There's a certain area for hospital work also that goes to the hospital over in Fargo. So a good portion of the Northwest state, then that claims work is routed to that regional office, which we would not have access to here in St. Paul.
Do you get that rent-free from the U.S. government?
Mr. Chair, I believe yes.
That's probably the main reason we're there. All right.
Resulting in the activities that I just spoke on resulted in 551 power of attorney and 1,932 federal ratings. The St. Paul Claims Division represents veterans and their dependents who seek benefits from the United States Department of Veterans Affairs with regards to compensation, non-service connection pension, vocational rehabilitation, or educational benefits. The division has an established relationship with all county veteran service officers and the USVDA to ensure veterans are appropriately served. The St. Paul Claims Division currently functions with 14 full-time employees and has a budget, again, combined with Fargo of $971,000.
You can skip through the facts and figures a little quicker. We don't need to read every one of them. I should have told you that earlier. So, we'll look at them, highlight what you think needs highlighting, but then on these pages, just kind of flash through it a little quicker.
Yes, Mr. Chair. With that, I'll skip to slide 14, accomplished goals. We established 7 tribal veteran service offices in cooperation with Native American nations throughout Minnesota. We increased the number of power of attorneys by at least 5% with a total of 9,240 in fiscal year 08. We participated in all 30, 60, 90-day National Guard reintegration events. We added a woman's veterans coordinator to the outreach division. We implemented virtual veterans live in the claims and outreach divisions in May of 2008. In our special efforts, we continue the annual outreach forum, slated again this year for April 2009. We participated in union retiree group benefit seminars, participated in state fire chiefs, firemen association benefits events, benefit-specific Vietnam veteran information folders and presentations. We participated in Parkinson's support group and interaction with Mayo Clinic. We received the ESGR, or Employers Support of Guard and Reserve Award. We received a Certificate of Appreciation from Minnesota National Guard for demobilization support and involvement in the 30, 60, 90 reintegration events. In regard to the Department's recent release of the strategic plan, our efforts include the implementation of an effective information management system to receive and distribute accurate information for reporting purposes, which is Virtual Veteran, increase outreach events with the implementation of Duluth outreach positions, scheduling dedicated and regular support to stakeholders, improving display and advertising. The implementation of an interoffice lean philosophy with the training of 5 lean facilitators and 15 lean 101 certified employees. The new employee training that I previously mentioned. And good stewardship of program funding and fiscal integrity. We hold regular meetings with financial staff based on fiscal status, and we receive monthly budget reports then forwarded to directors and supervisors. Slide 17. And this is a grand total and all-encompassing snapshot of 2008 Claims and Outreach Division annual total. We had 2,759 hours of training, 23 basic trainings provided, 487 staff events, 1,369 community contacts, 9,240 new power of attorneys, 23,687 processed pieces of mail or evidence, 46,417 phone calls, 7,063 walk-ins, 10,319 ratings, with a grand total of $226 million annually into the state of Minnesota.
So, long story short, for about 2 million, you're helping receive $226 million into the state.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
If you were bragging, that's what you'd say, right?
Mr. Chair, yes, sir.
Yeah. And again, I think the committee concurs that that's a good investment for us. You see on the spreadsheet there was some ramping up in some of these areas the last couple of years, but certainly this is where we bring dollars into the state, and this is what we're trying to stress with our county commissioners, by the way, too, which is why they need to work to continue to staff and fund our local county veteran service offices, because they work with veterans along with you to get these benefits in that come right into our counties and are spent locally for the most part. So this is federal dollars returned to our state.
This report has been an attempt to place into words the great work being done in the Claims and Outreach Division. Currently, Minnesota veterans and their dependents receive a monthly average of $19 million tax-free federal dollars as a result of the Claims and Outreach Division's efforts. When requested, our offices hold what we call get-to-know claims and outreach. I would be happy to make the arrangements and invite any one of you to see for yourself the great work being done every day by the Claims and Outreach staff. We in the claims divisions are excited about the future and possibilities our efforts to increase efficiencies and improve quality of services will bring our offices and the veterans of Minnesota. I thank you, Mr. Chair, for your invitation and to share this information and to the committee for its time. That is all I have, Mr. Chair.
You mentioned you were involved with reintegration efforts.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
What's your capacity there? Where do you go? What do you do? Briefly.
As an example, Mr. Chair, we participated last summer in a demobilization effort at Camp McCoy.
In Wisconsin.
Yes, Mr. Chair. In where the staff rotated for a matter of, I believe, if I recall correctly, it was 3 weeks. And we had three staff that rotated out to Fort McCoy and staffed and assisted the County Veteran Service Officers in personally meeting with each and every one of the members that were coming back from Iraq, so that we were able to not only receive their personal information and forward that information to the appropriate County Veteran Service Officer, but also speak with them very briefly about their entitlements and maybe some immediate needs that they might have.
I just want to tell my staff, this is a resource person for you. I mean, it was a mistake, but my son, who's in Iraq, sent me... they had a briefing or got a PowerPoint the other day. I can email him all the time at Balad Air Base, and he sent it, and it was every state, and it listed the benefits available in every state for veterans. And, of course, we were looking at Minnesota, and I told him, I said, yeah, that's what the Department of Veterans Affairs and our committee oversees those budgets. They assist you with that once you get back, getting him to have the understanding. So, he emailed my name out to all the people that are the 725 people that are serving there. So now I'm getting questions from them that I'm happy to answer, but I actually gave it to my staff to answer. So if they run into some snags, I'm going to have them call you or others over there who I know can assist. Because it's amazing. They do have questions. An example is one of them sent back and said, I'm interested in going to grad school afterwards, and they had some questions on what benefits might be available to them, and we know there is education benefits, but it's just real simple things that they're starting to think. They're coming back in June, where do I want to go next, and what benefits might be available? And so I'm getting questions now from selected soldiers serving over there, he and she soldiers, who have questions. So that's been an interesting concept. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking on the very last page, which I believe is the budget for the Tribal Service Office, and I notice a significant increase in printing and advertising from $0 to $180,000, also supplies from $15 to $150,000. I'm not saying they're inappropriate. I'm just wondering why such a huge increase in from 1 year to the next.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, we found that the advertising was a benefit. We initially took advantage of an opportunity for free advertising in a paper called The Circle, a Native American paper called The Circle, and we saw great benefit in that. And allowing the representatives throughout the state to have the proper tools necessary to attend benefits events and be viewed as professional and attractive, if you will, so that people would want to come see them. We saw that as a benefit. So we did place some extra funds and some extra attention on advertising. We saw that also as not necessarily a one-time spend, but something that we could utilize for many years down the road.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Follow-up on your office in Fargo. Is it a fully standalone office just located in Fargo, or is it integrated part of the North Dakota office?
That's right.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, there is no cooperation with the North Dakota office. It's a standalone office, funded partially, again, with the St. Paul Claims Office and the Fargo Claims Office all fall under one budget.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you. It was a good presentation, and if we got any questions, we know where to find you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Kathy Schwartz is coming next, it looks like. Is that all right?
Yep.
Thank you.
So again, we have benefits and services here. Kathy Schwartz, you have a handout in front of you, obviously, with spreadsheets. And again, I thank the department for this. You've made it very simple for us to follow along with these packets like this. It's worked very well. Just introduce yourself and your title and proceed any way you see fit.
Mr. Chair, Representatives, my name is Kathy Schwartz, and I'm the Director of the Veterans Benefits in the following areas: the Minnesota Veterans Cemetery, the Minnesota State Approving Agency, the State Soldiers Assistance Program, and the Veterans Preference area in the department. I'm going to give a brief overview. I've done some slides there, and then I can answer any questions that you might have. The budget pages for my programs are on page 18 of your budget pages.
All right. Very good.
First thing I'll start on is the Veterans Cemetery. Minnesota Cemetery is currently the one we have now is in Little Falls, Minnesota. We've received excellent marks for grounds and buildings in a triennial review from the U.S. Federal Government National Cemetery Administration. The cemetery staff have bury about 400 individuals a year. They provide the Bronze Star markers to the county veteran service officers each year. The cemetery director reported to the legislature on a state veteran cemetery study, and I gave you the link to our department where you can see that. And that was a study to see if there would be potential for additional state cemeteries in Minnesota. The proposed new cemetery in northern Minnesota near Duluth is currently in the middle of a feasibility study. We have had some issues with that, and we will continue to see what we can do. There's some property we were given from the Natural Resources Department. We have a small issue with the ability to get into the property. It's only like 33 feet wide, and we would need like 120.
So when can we expect to have a report back on that feasibility of going forward? With members that were here last year or 2 years ago, remember we kind of set this aside with staffing and other things, again anticipating that we maybe weren't quite ready to go on this yet. But when are you going to have your report ready so we can get an understanding on that?
Mr. Chair, Representatives, we are currently dealing with individuals up in that area to see that. I would suspect within 3 weeks to a month at the latest we would know.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing that when
okay.
you get it.
Thank you.
Now, tell me about who Torkelson isn't here. Someone, I know that Senator Frederickson introduced a bill for a cemetery down in southwest Minnesota, and I'm not sure if Torkelson or someone else has a bill over here. Are you aware of that? Are you working with that at all?
Mr. Chair, Representative. Mr. Chair, Representative Coonan.
Coonan, okay.
Has it on the side.
Basically, I'm just going to, you don't have to tell me about it. I'm just going to tell you or the committee my editorial comments. And I've talked to Coonan, actually. That's who it was. Appreciate the bill. I think the bill right now specifies that they're asking for money to purchase land for a veterans cemetery in the Redwood County area somewhere. And I think what Coonan recognizes and others is, number one, there is a need, I think, for that area of the state, and no question we should take a look at it. But number two, I guess what I would advise as we move these bills forward is we get a little creative. I think, I don't know that we have to be purchasing land, similar to the Duluth piece, which we're basically having given to us. I think there's plenty of county lands and city lands and people who are veterans or families of veterans who might want to donate land for that activity. which I suspect would be much more acceptable to this group up here in these budgetary times. And I think we can accomplish that. I actually would, and I think we should look for those types of things. I was thinking about even, who's from around that area? There's a state park right on the river there. It's a fort, yeah, in Redwood County. Fort Ridgely. Things like that. I've been to Fort Ridgely, and there's a huge acreage spread out there overlooking the Minnesota, absolutely gorgeous. And I think we should explore some of these other options of our own state assets, as well as maybe county and other assets that are available down there. And I suspect we can put a deal together. But for the committee and others, Representative Berkson, we're talking about you since you weren't here. I know your senator had introduced a bill, but Conan introduced it on the other side for a cemetery down in that area. And we're talking about how we should maybe explore some public lands that might be available already, so we don't have to purchase, but maybe we can utilize some county or state assets that are already there. So we're going to...
You mentioned Fort Ridgely.
I mean, think about, and that's just one example. As you think through the southwest part of the state, there's all kinds of publicly owned lands already that might set up some absolutely gorgeous sites that are already staffed in part by state or county employees or others that, along with our staff for cemeteries, could actually make something like that work. So I think we need to think outside the box on some of these. But I just want to give you kind of a heads up in the committee to think about these things as they come. And that's probably a bill we'll look at again as part of that bonding discussion we have in May sometime for next year's bonding bill. All right.
Okay.
Didn't mean to interrupt you.
Thank you. I was just going to go over the cemetery budget talking points a little bit. Our current budget for fiscal year 9 is $316,000, $275,000 of which is appropriated from the general fund, and $25,000 comes from our operating fund. In 9, we had $16,000, which was forwarded from 08. The fiscal year 10 and 11 budgets are $300,000, and that would be the $275,000 from the general fund and $25,000 from our operations. This dollar amount covers most of the salaries and fringe benefits for the 6 FTE that we have.
Representative Torres, did you have another question?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's just kind of a follow-up on what you're talking about with the regional veteran cemetery. It's being talked about. It's a formative idea. It's, you know, just kind of getting off the ground, and I think we'd appreciate input from anyone who is interested in that issue and has ideas as to locating and how that whole issue might be handled. It's not like it's written in stone right now, right. So your input or input from people within the veterans community would be greatly appreciated to both either myself, Representative Coonan, or Senator Fredrickson.
Good. Very good. Proceed.
Okay.
You can go through the numbers kind of quickly because we have those on the spreadsheet.
Okay.
And we're all perusing them as you speak anyway. So.
These. Cemetery development and maintenance accounts is in the Fund 200. We have a small FTE coming out of there, 0.8 FTE, out of the Special Revenue Fund. And then we also have our cemetery gift account, which is the Fund 690. In the past, before fiscal year 09, any donated monies were deposited into that cemetery development and maintenance account. And we kept separate spreadsheets on the donations, but they've been separated now into the Fund 690, so that we'll have specific tracking of those.
Last year we set up, we put money forward, I don't know if it's in your division or somewhere else, to reimburse local color guards for their participation in funerals. Is that in your division, and where's that money at, or how's it going? Do we have enough? Are people applying for that? Are they not?
Mr. Chair, Sherry Kromstrup of the Department of Veterans Affairs Finance Officer. The Military Funeral Honors one-time funding for 8 and 9 of $100,000 each year. That isn't under Director Schwartz's purview, but we have spent approximately, I want to say around $125,000 of the total $200,000 so far in the biennium.
Okay. So it's about right, maybe a little less. Is that something that you've asked for next year, too?
Mr. Chair, no, it is not.
Okay.
The next area that I wanted to talk about was our LinkVet Veterans Counseling Hotline. $220,000 was added to the base in fiscal year 09 for the operation of the LinkVet telephone line. And for the purposes of efficiencies, our commissioner was asked to combine the service with other toll-free higher education call center in Minnesota. The department has been working with the individuals from Minnesota Online up in Perham, Minnesota, that developed the online program up there. And we should be ready to switch over with our LinkVet call center here in St. Paul to the Perham office sometime in late July, early August. The next area I wanted to speak about was our state approving agency. They're a fund 300, budgeted at $360,000 for fiscal year 9 with 4 FTEs. This area is, the employees are state employees, but they are fully funded by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Their function is to review, evaluate, and approve quality education and training programs for veterans' benefits. And a highlight in that area is on October 1st of 2008, our department took over the approval of OJT and apprenticeships establishments from the Department of Labor and Industry with the state. And the budget is $20,000 per year that we received in addition to our current, it was at 340. And this will allow the department to hopefully, you know, get more jobs established, get more money for paying OJT in the state of Minnesota, and establish some programs that the veterans can utilize their veterans benefits when they come back to Minnesota. The next area is the benefits and services area under with State Soldiers Assistance Program. There are currently 10 FTE in that area. We do subsistence grants, special needs grants. We do the veteran education, survivor spouse, and dependent education benefits. We process the DD-214, and that's where currently we're answering the LinkVet calls. During 2008, we received over 8,000 discharge papers to be processed. We scan those, index them for later retrieval for the veterans. The Veterans Education and Survivor Spouse and Dependent Education, we have a one-time grant to veterans who have exhausted all their federal benefits, and then we have a program that provides $750 per year for the surviving spouse and dependents, and they also receive free tuition at Minsku Colleges and the University of Minnesota until they reach a bachelor's degree.
Help me out here. State Soldiers Assistance monies, what are we asking for this year as opposed to last year? I'm trying to find it on my spreadsheet.
Where the base is 5.926 million.
Okay. And so it's a little decrease from last year, not much. We were at 6.086. How much of that money? Do we have, I think I asked once, do we have a list of all the a list of comprehensive list of all the monies that go out of the office. Isn't this, you know, whether it comes from requests from CVSOs or from others? Do we have a list of all that and that you can provide us in the next week or two?
Mr. Chair, representatives, we included in your packet last week.
You did. All right.
The SSAP activity report. It's by type of benefit, by county.
Where's that at? I'm not finding it, so I don't know. Do other members have that list? I don't know that we have it. But get a copy. We'll have it shortly. All right, thank you. We'll wait for that before we talk any further about that.
Okay.
And frankly, the questions have come up in the past about the 10 FTEs in there. I know last year, as we were doing some supplemental budgeting and looking at those, we're handing it out right now. I mean, if you can kind of briefly explain what the 10 FTEs do, I think the question really came on the State Soldiers Assistance Grants, that a lot of those were processed through CVSO offices, and it was hard for us to understand why there would be a need for a lot of personnel time once they got to you, other than tracking, checking the sheet and writing the check out. But I see now you've listed two or three other things that they do in that office, and maybe you can talk about the division of those FTEs within here so we get an understanding.
Mr. Chair, representatives, we do receive applications from the county veteran service officers. They process a DVA-1 form, and they send in supporting documents with that. The staff in the office takes that information and has to process it. We review bank statements. Each case possibly has anywhere from one to four different requests on it for the different types of benefits. Someone might want dental benefits, optical benefits, a special needs, and they may go on subsistence. So each case is, you know, more complicated than just processing a payment for an optical. Like if someone wanted an optical, we have to make sure they qualify first and foremost. We have to make sure we have a DD-214. We have to make sure the vendor is in the vendor system. We send a letter out authorizing the person to go get their optical benefits at the optical place of choice. And then the bill comes back in for payment, and we do that on each family member. Each one gets an authorization. And then the same would go for that same family, might also get dental benefits, and they might get, dentures and extractions. And special needs requests are very detailed. We have to, a lot of times, look at people if they have IRAs and different types of financial things. We make a lot of phone calls. Even though the CVSOs are pretty good at what they send in, we have a lot of things lacking that we have to go back to the veteran for, as far as information we need. We started a checkout sheet for them, which has improved things quite a bit, but there's still a lot of contact back and forth from our VACs to the county service officers and to the veterans themselves.
How many FTEs are focused on LinkVet?
Our staff, our Veterans Assistance Coordinators, there are six of them. They do the payments for optical, dental, special needs, and they answer the LinkVet calls.
On those items?
On everything.
On everything?
Yes.
Okay.
They do.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just looking at the financial handout here. We've got covers at 6 months, the last 6 months, basically. And I note that out of 1,012 applications, there's been almost 40% of them have been denied. Is that because of the paperwork's wrong, or the costs are too high, or a combination of such things, or why such a high denial rate?
Ms. Schwartz.
Mr. Chair, representatives, a lot of it could be that they don't qualify financially.
Okay.
And with our special needs grants, they may get partial approval and partial denial. They might ask for five or six things, and they might get one item or two items out of that. So that's why the high denial rate.
Thank you.
All right. Proceed.
Okay. I did a comparison for SSAP. It should be your next item up there. And you can see the numbers yourself there. During the first 8 months of fiscal year 9, we feel that the department's been able to keep 379 veteran families in their homes through the special needs grant. And we have did this comparison through December, and applications or requests had gone up about 2%, and then we decided to span that through February 28th, and those requests have actually gone up by 10% now, from comparing to last year.
So you think payments for utilities and other things, if requested, if they fall behind, do you also make emergency rent or mortgage payments?
Yes. Yes, sir.
All right.
My last slide I have here is just, I just wanted to add the Veterans Preference Officer duties in our office. That is one FTE. That position is actually paid out of the operations area, admin service area. And I just put the core duties on there. I won't read them to you, and they're pretty small, so you have them in your packet. In fiscal year 8, the Veterans Preference Officer, along with the U.S. Department of Labor and Veterans Employment and Training Office in St. Paul, developed a 25-minute public service DVD on best preference, and they spoke on state veterans preference and USERA, the federal veterans preference. And we also this year have increased efforts to inform the various political subdivisions within the state about veterans' rights and their responsibilities under the preference laws. And that is it for my presentation, unless
right.
Someone has questions.
I'll just mention, I think we did get a veteran service officer bill into this committee division last night. It was referred to us, so we'll be looking at this issue. Someone's got a bill out there for something. I can't remember what, but I believe it was referred to us. Representative Fowles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at page 21 in our books, and I believe that those numbers on that budget are the totals of the numbers that you've just gone over. At least many of them match up real close. And I'm wondering what the transfers of $6 million this year and next year are. If you could share with me what that is and how that works, I'd appreciate it.
I know our finance person do it, but I think it's a GI Bill.
Mm-hmm.
What we've come up with, I can explain it. We've put money into the GI Bill, and we continue to get money. As you see, last year we didn't utilize very much, if any, of it because federal benefits came through. So again, we still oversee those dollars. They're out there again, and it's yet to be seen if we'll utilize them or not. But it's they're there as a placeholder, basically, for our last dollar GI Bill program. All right, Magnus, Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I not a question for a testifier, but I just wanted to tell the committee members and the folks in the audience that there's a movie out right now on HBO. I saw it over the weekend. It's called Taking Chance, and it's a true story about the Marines and the guys taking the a deceased Marine back to his family, and it's quite a powerful movie and a moving story. And so those of you that sometimes forget about what goes on with the military and through the whole procession of handling someone that unfortunately has died in service, I really recommend all of you to watch the movie. It's really a powerful, good movie.
I can report that the chair has seen the movie, because I'm a remote control expert, and as I was flipping around, I ran into it one day. So it's like Siskel and Ebert in here some days, too. Huh? Anyone else have a movie review or anything you want to bring forth? Representative Magnus is right. It's a very kind of a solemn movie, but it's very informative. If you wonder how they handle a body from the field all the way back to the gravesite where they finally rest, it's a very interesting HBO movie, a made for HBO movie. True story. All right,
Mr. Chair, members, Mike Puglisi, Deputy Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Affairs. I just wanted to quickly touch upon a little bit more on the SSAP and our benefits division.
Have you seen that movie?
I haven't seen the movie yet, but now I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah.
So. there, you know, Director Schwartz commented a little bit on the complexity of the benefits that come in, and you know, I know a question was asked about the denial rate. I just wanted to touch upon those quickly. We encourage all veterans to apply, even if we think they might be over on income and assets, just so that we can take a look at what their issues are, their situation is. We might not be able to help them with our program, but at least we get a look, and then we can refer them either to the VA or to another program that might be able to assist them. So we encourage, when in doubt, don't adjudicate in your office's CVSOs. Send them the claim, let us make a formal decision, and then let us work with them to see if we can point them in another direction. Also, you know, the CVSOs do some of the grunt work for us out in the field with putting together a package and forwarding it in for benefits. Once it comes in, though, they're quite complex. There are multiple issues, their income and assets. We have to verify everything to make sure, first of all, they're eligible. A lot of times the CVSOs are not able to get everything together for us so that we can make a quick decision. So there's a lot of development on our end that goes into it to ensure that we're you know, using taxpayers' money smartly, and we're not granting benefits that shouldn't be granted. Some of this development takes a lot of time, trying to get 214, working with the banks to verify records and stuff. And these benefits are of an urgent nature. These benefits fill the gaps that the feds offer. These are mostly for people that are experiencing a period of temporary disability and are out of work. So we don't have the luxury of the federal VA to wait 7 months to make a decision. We turn decisions out sometimes in 2 days, sometimes a week. The longest we like to wait is 2 weeks. We can't do that with a skeleton crew, with all the development that goes into it. And that's why we have the complement of staff that we do.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Two more left. Analong, Renzi, Worlds. We're going to get through you two today, and then we can say adios for a while to veterans while we get done with agriculture. Representative Tremba. Watch out. Don't spill that milk.
Okay. On the last activity report, on the third row, it says CG amount. What is CG?
On the form we just got handed out to us. Third column, it says CG amount. On your spreadsheet. I don't know where Ms. Schwartz went. She knows, probably in her sleep.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, CG stands for cash grants.
Cash grants. That's how much money went out the door then from the request. All right.
Thank you.
Anything else?
I'm fine.
All right. Very good. Welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. I am Anna Long, Communications Director with the Department of Veterans Affairs. Happy to be here today. Thanks for having us. The three areas I'd like to briefly highlight today is our web development, depleted uranium program, and then finally our marketing and outreach category. Web development has been a major initiative for us. Our webmaster created, updates, and oversees the five websites highlighted there. I'll just pick out a few to talk about. I'd like to show you. MinnesotaVeteran.org is our current site that is being redesigned to be more user-friendly for our veterans and families and other stakeholders. And this will transition to an FAQ, or frequently asked questions basis, that will make information very accessible to our users. We're really looking forward to this transition, and our webmaster is serving as a liaison for that project overall. We also have our state website, which will be redesigned to match the look and feel of the new MinnesotaVeteran.org site. We certainly want people to understand they're on different sites. We don't want to confuse them, but we do want them to kind of seamlessly interact with each other. The Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers, our webmaster, recently worked with that organization to help them obtain their own URL. Previously, they were hosted on our website. The benefit to this is that they now have their own URLs they can use in advertising, outreach. We still maintain that site. Our webmaster oversees the content, but they do have a few more options. We'll continue to promote that website as well, off of our website, links off of that, as well as through our newsletter and other e-blasts, things like that. And then the bottom one there is the Minnesota Honors Vietnam Veterans.org website. That is for the event that's coming up in June. We are able to take registration online with that website, as well as donations for Military Order of the Purple Heart. So that's kind of a brand new website that's just launching now.
Now, are all these linked from one site? So again, in our quest to go to one place and find all the information we need, I could go to one, your MinnesotaVeterans.org, and get to all these other sites?
Mr. Chair, committee members, absolutely. In fact, that's always been the goal and the initiative of MinnesotaVeteran.org, and this will make that an even easier process, because we want to get as much information out to our veterans and our users as we can.
What do we print on the magnets and the other handouts for LinkVet? Do we print that website on there too?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. We'll be promoting that website even more now, yes.
Very good.
It really gives our users, Mr. Chair, a one-stop shop, and that's our goal.
It's our goal, too. We're with you.
Excellent. Additionally, we've been very focused on reaching our key audiences with regular updates. Our webmaster oversees the complex e-blast system that really delivers timely updates to everyone. You can see those listed here, and I just need to say that in the past year, actually even less than the past year, since October, we've more than tripled our subscription rates to these e-blast systems.
I know I get that. The other members, you getting that in your email? You get the e-blast from the department? Would you put on this entire committee on there?
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to. That's a perfect caveat to my next slide.
All right.
Our newsletter, which specifically I'd like to highlight. This is an excellent way to keep your finger on the pulse of issues in the veterans community. And if you're not all on the list, I'd be happy to put you on there and encourage you to, any constituents you have who have a tie to the veterans community, to encourage them to subscribe as well. And this is it's a statewide newsletter that doesn't just highlight official state functions. It's really any veteran function at all. We have subscribers that aren't veterans, that aren't even necessarily connected to the veterans community. It could be a medical practitioner that just has an interest in maintaining updates. So, this URL will bring you right to that newsletter. I'd be happy to subscribe everybody here.
And make sure
you
get Representative Tremba and Representative Conan's committees on there, too.
Excellent.
Should
thank
have
you,
the whole
Mr.
legislature
Chair.
On there, actually. It'd be easier just to add 201 names. But whatever you want to do. But I think it's important we get it. Everyone's got a delete key if they don't want it. But, it's electronic. It's very easy to handle for us. So.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. And, in fact, in an effort to be fiscally and environmentally responsible, this is, as you mentioned, an electronic-based publication. And what happens is you'll receive an email that gives you a link to a PDF. And that PDF is easily printable, so if you'd rather have a hard copy to look at, that's an option for you. Or you can view it online. So it saves us a lot of resources. I should also mention we do print and mail a small number of these for some of our clientele who do not have access to email, including some of our World War II veterans, so they can still receive this newsletter. Several months ago, we launched The Bugle, which is an internal newsletter for both programs and services and the Veterans Home staff. It's really an excellent way for us to tie the two together, make sure that all of our team members receive up-to-date information, have a voice, and kind of have a unified location.
Representative Szymanski has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Ms. Long. In terms of the backing up the newsletter and so forth, the information available, we heard a bill a couple weeks ago in a different committee that addressed the issue of for visually impaired. Does your newsletter and some of those things have access for the visually impaired?
Ms. Long.
Mr. Chair, Representative, absolutely. Any of our publications, including our brochures, anything that we put out, we have access for any different areas. So hearing impaired, visually impaired, Braille. We're currently the Bugle, our internal newsletter comes out once a month. We're looking at increasing that to twice a month. Just to wrap up web development, some of our current and future operations, a calendar program that we have launched internally, and we're just preparing to launch this externally, an excellent resource statewide, and again, not just if it's a state activity, but any veteran activity across the state or even outside the state could be included on this. And this has advanced filter capabilities, so you could view things by topic, date, organization. For example, if you wanted to know what's happening with the VFW for the next year, you could filter to just see those events. Or if you wanted to see what's happening at the veterans' homes, you could filter by those events. So we're really looking forward to this. It's going to be a tremendous resource for us. Again, linked off of our newly improved website in the near future. We also are working on an intranet website, which will be one more way for us to connect internally, gather information, a central location, very important to the cohesiveness between now the programs and services and the veterans' home side. And we will continue, as I mentioned, I already kind of covered this, but we'll be redesigning the MVDA state website to match the Minnesota veteran look and feel. I'd also like to take a few minutes just to outline our recent depleted uranium program. It's still ongoing. We're a full partner with the Minnesota National Guard on this program. I, as a captain in the National Guard, and with all the relationships that we've built with our department, this is an easy partnership for us to have with the Department of Military Affairs. Our goals of this program were to provide access by our veterans and their families to the most up-to-date current medical information and scientific information on depleted uranium. We want them to have access to the information and access to testing, to accurate testing. Those were our goals. Of this campaign, research was by far the most comprehensive category, as you can imagine, just gathering all the information. This allowed us to create a white paper, which is a scientific and medically based summation of all of the findings and elements surrounding depleted uranium that's scientifically and medically based. Additionally, some collateral that we created was a brochure as well as fast facts. We printed a small number of these. But again, in order to be fiscally responsible, these are all downloadable off of our website, so we can not only have instant access, you know, really anywhere in the world to these documents. If we have a soldier or a service member who's overseas and wants to get information, they can do that instantly from their computer. We also are working with the National Guard on continued efforts with Beyond Yellow Ribbon that I'll talk about in just a minute. We held an educational forum on depleted uranium on January 30th, and we had a great turnout, very thorough Q&A session, and this was made up of a panel of experts from the scientific and medical world, both government, military, and the private sector, who came together who are experts in the field. So it really provided a very good overview of all the issues surrounding DU. We also had our local a representative from the VA Medical Center there to talk about the testing process and make sure that everyone understands they have access to the screening process for depleted uranium. Finally, this was able to provide us another way to build even stronger partnerships with our VA Medical Centers, not just here in Minnesota, but with our surrounding states as well. Reach out to the environmental health coordinators and also to evaluate the current testing procedures and make sure that they were exactly where we needed them to be. A few of the continued outreach opportunities that we have with depleted uranium. We're working on partnering with civilian medical practitioners. In fact, one of our panelists, Dr. Kilpatrick, is interested in working with us to take some of the video that we have from the forum and providing that with others in the medical field so that they can understand, for example, if they were to have a veteran, if they were to see a veteran, they could possibly refer them back to the VA or understand some of the issues surrounding depleted uranium. On that same line, joiningforcesonline.org is a program through health partners that works with the private sector medical field, does the same thing, so we're very interested in getting this information out to them. And we're printing brochures to include in all of the packets for Beyond the Yellow Ribbon reintegration process, again, so our veterans and their families can have access to that information. And we do have a depleted uranium page on the website that includes all the information, video of the forum, as well as those downloadable brochures.
And we do appreciate those efforts. I know Representative Trimba, I believe, had the bill last year that kind of got this rolling from a legislative standpoint, too. And I know she's become somewhat of an expert on it here, too, around here, if people have questions. Representative Trimba?
Mr. Chair, I actually was at the forum, so it was very, very interesting.
Interesting and important, so thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. It's good to see you there as well. Advertising has really been a key element to our success over the last 2 years. Some of the challenges that we face that advertising has really helped us with is the fact that our stakeholders, the clients, don't really understand that we're here for them and what we do, and that they don't sign up for benefits for various reasons. So this has been a way for us to really get the word out there. We've been able to track our results to demonstrated success with our Link That Line. That's the number and the email or the website that we list is minnesotaveteran.org. So we're able to track the success of that, especially through Link That, because we track where people heard about that phone line. And it's been very successful. I don't want to take time and go through each of these categories, but if you have a couple of minutes, Mr. Chair, I do have, I don't think it's working on here, but I can play it off of my phone. I do have an in-game feature for the Gopher Sports campaign that we've done, and it's, you know, it's really been a successful campaign. We've had tremendous feedback on this. It's an in-game feature. It's about 2 minutes long. It intros with explaining that we're a sponsor. They talk about a veteran who is an athlete.
Turn it on.
All right.
You might have to put the mic up to it.
I actually think that link isn't working, but I just wanted to try. But I'll play it off my phone.
That'll work.
To the elbow right side, back to Johnson now. Well away from the basket, left side, left foot. Wide open, three, it's good. He hits. Here's a Johnson steal again. It's a 2-on-2. Johnson leads in, shot up, he gets it.
Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. For information on benefits and services, call 888-LINK-VET or visit the web at nvva.state.mn.us. This is Gopher Halftime. Here's Mike Grimm.
As always in this segment, we have our Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Halftime Spotlight. It is sponsored by the Department of Veterans Affairs. Minnesota wrestling coach Jay Robinson has coached the Golden Gophers to 3 national championships, including the 2017 title. He bases much of his coaching and lifestyle choices on his time in the military. That armed forces experience began while he was a college student at Oklahoma State in the 1960s.
I went in the Army right after I graduated from college. I was in ROTC, so I took the commission, the regular Army commission, and then I went to Infantry Officers Basic, and then I went to Airborne School, and then my first duty station was in Jackson, South Carolina. So from there I went to Jungle Warfare School, volunteered for Vietnam, and then did a little wrestling in the Army, and then went to Vietnam, came back from Vietnam, went to the World Championships, went back to Vietnam, came back from Vietnam, and then wrestled in the Olympic Games. So, I spent 3.5 years in the service.
Representing his country in more ways than one, how much did the military influence him?
I tell a story a lot about one of the, at my first duty station, I worked for a Major Yuswa who probably has had more, kind of an impression, made more of an impression on me than anybody. He taught me that, to look at the world a little bit different, and he taught me that, he used to tell me all the time, if I don't teach you anything, Lieutenant, I'm going to teach you how to think, so... That one individual had a huge impact on my life, and then I think just the different things, going through some of the different Army schools, Ranger school, there's a lot of lessons about pushing yourself and about learning to get through things by taking it one day at a time. Those lessons that you learn in some of those schools, they stick with you your whole life, and they really become who you are, and they help you get to where you end up later on in your life.
And what about his time when he volunteered in Vietnam?
Well, I was there in 71 and 72, so the war was mostly over. There wasn't a lot going on. It was more of a deal to where no one wanted to be the last guy to die in Vietnam. So it was almost kind of a standoff. We knew where they were, and they knew where we were, and everybody kind of avoided everybody else. So it was pretty much an uneventful tour, really. I mean, you were there with 500,000 other guys, but it was the same thing, I think, with a lot of guys. We were there, but, you know, we did what we were supposed to do, and it was one of those deals that kind of left a bitter taste in your mouth, I think, frankly, more than anything else, just because we had the capability of winning it, and we didn't do it. You know, it's that lack of resolve, which is probably going on in Iraq now.
And even now, as head coach at Minnesota, Jay Robinson encourages some of his wrestlers to take a look at a life in the military.
Well, we got one guy, Trent Halibut, who is going to go in the Navy. He's going to go to Naval Special Warfare, the SEALs. He wants to become a SEAL, and it's a huge deal for him. I think that the wrestlers do have a lot of special traits that SEALs are looking for, you know, dedication, discipline, sacrifice, hard work. Probably the biggest one is the ability to function under duress, lack of food, lack of sleep, extreme exercise. All those things are just normal every day for wrestlers. So I think that there's a place for wrestlers in the service, not only in the Navy with the SEALs, but Army with Special Forces or Rangers or Force Recon with the Marines. I think there's a lot of transfer for athletes with the military service, and I think it's a great way for you to get out and experience a little bit of what life has to offer, and there's some great leadership lessons at the same time.
Golden Gopher great Jay Robinson, a former Olympic wrestler, a three-time national championship coach at Minnesota, and a veteran of the United States Army. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs proudly serving Minnesota veterans and families. For information on benefits and services, call 1-888-LINK-VET or visit the web at www.mbva.com.
All right, very good. Now we're going to ask you to hurry up a little bit so we can get Reggie up here. And
I can talk even faster. No problem, Mr.
Yeah.
Chair. I do want to mention, though, with advertising, that each of our advertising partners has been incredible to work with. They've given us substantial discounts, worked within our budget, and in fact, those Gopher features are the longest in-game feature they've ever done for any advertiser. I'll just quickly go over the next few slides. We have a new logo. We've been able to really create a new identity, especially as we came together with the Veterans Homes and the Programs and Services side, to move forward together with a unified vision and mission and now a unified look. Previously, we used the State of Minnesota seal. It is nice to have that identity, and we created it with a black and white version, a two-color version, and a four-color version, which is good for different applications to save money where we can. For this sort of presentation, everything's four-color. It's great, but when we print things, we can be careful to use whatever is best for the application. Also, just listing a few of the brochures there. One thing I should mention from the advertising is that we're working on launching an advertising campaign specifically for the Tribal Veteran Service Officers and to promote that program to really drive our Native American veterans to obtain benefits. In an effort to create efficiencies, cut down on overhead, we moved away from a clipping service that charges per clip. That can get very expensive, especially if you have a big news month. So we've made use of new technology like Google Alerts, web tracking, and we're tracking this in-house now ourselves. It saves us quite a bit of money. It's also a great way to archive our stories. We display them for our internal audience as well. And through our strategic media relations plan, we've really been able to maximize our press coverage. The next big campaign we're working on for media relations is with the Higher Education Veterans Program. We consider it very important to share resources with the community and forge partnerships. These are just a few that we've worked with. Other state agencies we've shared resources with, as well as some private sector organizations that I'm involved with. It's a great way to share information, save money. Some of our current and future operations. In closing, I would just like to highlight. We're looking at doing some surveys to really understand how we can better serve our veterans and their families. We have a very broad base, probably more broad than any organization, because we have veterans who are joining the military at 18 out of high school, 17, 18, all the way to World War II, and their families, which could be any age. So diverse backgrounds, ethnic backgrounds, religious backgrounds. So we really want to find out how we can better serve all of those groups. And one of the big initiatives we're working on is to become more involved in social networking. It's a great way to reach out to some of our younger veterans. We need to make sure that we're continuing to reach all of our veterans. And again, this is a great way to reach that younger generation. In fact, the population, 21 and below, 75% of them, is just a statistic for you, 75% of them use social networking as a means of communication. And for example, we can have a veteran who's currently serving overseas in Iraq, who's, you know, getting ready to come home, has time, he's on the computer, he or she are on the computer. They can find information about us once we become more involved in the social networking angle, We are hoping to launch our Facebook page in the next week, so look forward to sharing that information with you as well. And subject to questions, that is all I have.
Okay, any questions for Ms. Long? Did you say you were captain in the guard?
That is correct, Representative.
Captain Long, thank you for your service, too.
Well, thank you for your support. We really appreciate it.
Now, seeing no questions? All right, you're getting off lucky. You're lucky we squeezed the time in. Here, hold the questions down for you. Mr. Reggie, would you come forward? You're the last one on the list. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Worlds. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, I'm Reggie Worlds, Senior Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. It is my pleasure to meet with you and provide you an update on Thule created programs to assist veterans and military members with their unmet needs. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs core program and vet-to-vet peer counseling. Minnesota Service Corps, CORE stands for Case Management, Outreach, Referral, and Education. The goal is to help all family members develop skills to bring about successful reunions and lasting family stability. The program officially started November 2008 with an appropriation of $500,000. Lutheran Social Services caseworkers are located strategically around the state. Referrals to the program comes through the sources of the CVSOs and our designated MDVA staff, and they are authorized to refer cases to this program. Eligibility will be determined by the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs in collaboration with LSS and the CVSO. The veteran must have a need and have a verified honorable service. So far, 55 veterans and or their family members have been served in 25 counties statewide. Out of 8 services reported, case assessment, case management, project management, and financial counseling brought in the most need. I'll move on to the next program, which is peer-to-peer counseling. A one-time appropriation of $25,000 was allocated to develop a pilot program for peer-to-peer counseling among combat veterans. MDVA is collaborating with NAMI Minnesota in the development of this program, and it will be named Vet2Vet. The allocated funds will be used to create 3 support groups for veterans living with mental illness and or experiencing readjustment difficulties. Vet2Vet is a support group for veterans living with a mental illness such as PTSD, anxiety, or depression. The Vet2Vet support groups will use the NAMI connection model and establish peer-based mutual support group model. 2 groups will be located in the Twin Cities metro area, one of which will be for women veterans, and a 3rd group will be near Camp Ripley, Minnesota. These groups will provide a place that offers respect, understanding, encouragement, and hope. The first Vet2Vet Advisory Committee meeting was held on January 22, 2009, with discussion including the basic outline of the program, recruiting facilitators, location to hold groups, and the next steps to take. In conclusion, we are still in the process of finding volunteers to facilitate the support groups. All facilitators will make a weekly commitment to facilitate the 90-minute group for a minimum of 1 year. And NAMI will hold a 3-day facilitator training in March 2009. If there are any questions, I will take them now.
Members have any questions for Mr. Worlds? How many, Mr. Worlds, how many facilitators are you short now? Are you...
Well, we haven't set a designated number. We're kind of hoping to have anywhere from 20 to 25, I think is the number, and I think we're right about 15, if I'm not mistaken, right now.
Right. Okay, seeing no questions, you want to proceed then to the IT, or? You have a change item in that. Can you tell us what page that is on?
Actually, I think that has already been addressed by our legislative director at an earlier meeting, sir.
On page 10 in your book, I understand, if members want to take a look at that. Any questions? If not, I think we'll pull the pin for today, and tomorrow we'll start at 10:30 at the same place. And thank you to the department. Very good presentations today, and with that, the meeting's adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.